And we'll turn to Shively versus Utah Valley Authority.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Good morning. Your Honors, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
All right. Just one moment. Well, while we're waiting, I just want to make sure you heard earlier. I know you want to say 5 minutes of rebuttal, but you're in charge of that.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Steve Sumption. I represent the estate of the esteemed Dr. Michael J. Shively. Affirmation by this court of the preemptive dismissal of this case will set a very dangerous precedent for numerous reasons. Number one, the extreme legal position that UVU and the defendants have taken is that there is no due process due. There's simply no due process required. In fact, in their answer, they repeated that theme, that legal theme, over 10 times. Now, let's look at this factually to appreciate why that embracing that standard is extremely dangerous. Shively was unique in that he had a sterling 27-year history with no notice of any issue before he was blindsided. In fact, there was no pre-suspension notice or opportunity to be heard on allegations that ended up to be false, in particular with regard to one of the professors, Dr. Flood, who claimed that she was threatened that she thought Dr. Shively was going to shoot her, or that her academic freedom was challenged. These are among the many allegations that ultimately were found to be false. Now, this whole complaint and this was orchestrated by a ringleader nephew of the president of the university who orchestrated these complaints, and he wasn't even a student of Dr. Shively. Instead of relying on vetted complaints that could go through the normal process of Dr. Shively's supervisor, Dr. Price, or a committee, the university suspended and escorted Dr. Shively out of the university with no notice. And this was particularly important in the court's order. I'm going to read to you one sentence from the trial court's order that really reinforces just what I said with regard to no pre-termination notice or opportunity to be heard. On the second page of the trial court's ruling and memorandum decision, it states, quote, in June and early July 2019, counsel for Shively asked UVU to disclose the accusations against Shively and warned defendants that Shively was suffering because of the prolonged investigation. This is 4 months after the university had suspended Dr. Shively. That is significant because Dr. Shively finally was able to read a 200-page investigation report for 2 hours. Now, I asked to be a part of that. And instead, he was allowed to sit for 2 hours and could not take it with him and was allowed to read it and simply make notes, his own personal notes. And then it was taken away. Now, that's 4 months, almost 4 months since the March suspension.
Counsel, let me stop you for a minute. So I am assuming that the purpose of this is you're explaining to us how this case is outside sort of the mill run kind of case where someone's shortly suspended with pay while an investigation occurs, and that this is an extraordinary case that might take us out of that context.
Precisely, Judge Carson. This is one of those unique settings where, as I mentioned earlier, the UVU disregarded and said there is no need to follow due process because Dr. Shively was still being paid.
Okay. And now let me stop you again. So do you have another case that you can cite to us where a court has said, look, the normal rule is if it's a suspension with pay, there's no cognizable property interest at stake. So no due process violation. Do you have one that where the court says, but this case is so exceptional that there is?
Thank you. Yes, in Llewellyn versus City of East Chicago in the Fifth Circuit, the court specifically said that denial of a substantial amount of rights can produce indirect economic benefits, even when the paycheck is unaffected. That would seem to be very persuasive support in this in the Tenth Circuit. But what I would like to highlight for you is that even the cases within the Tenth Circuit are very supportive of this position. These facts are, as you noted, extraordinary. And let's go a little deeper into the unique aspect of this, in that there was Hewland v. Yates in the Tenth Circuit was a particularly powerful case where the court noted that there was a clearly protected interest. And they also pointed out the numerous substantive due process rights that were abided by in that case. In that case, there was counsel. There was even an appellate process. There was even questioning of the witnesses. None of that was allowed in the Shively case. And that creates a serious problem, not just with the Tenth Circuit rulings in Pitts and the Hicks case and the Yates case, but more importantly, perhaps, the Loudermill, Cleveland v. Loudermill U.S. Supreme Court case, which requires this pre-termination notice. And this notice is particularly important in the Shively case. Why? Because as we see his response after 4 months, he was willing to change his tests to make them less difficult. Remember, the primary issue that UVU had with Dr. Shively after the report was, if you look at that exhaustive report, really what they're saying is that his tests were too hard. And what was very compelling is when UVU claimed they didn't receive his response, where he willingly said, I'm okay to make those changes. Well, had there been any kind of a hearing as required by Loudermill or Hewland v. Yates in the Tenth Circuit and these other cases, that would have come out and there would have been an opportunity to be heard and for there to be a correction made.
I'm sorry. I don't want you to lose your train of thought, but I do want to stop you because I wanted to follow up on what you just said in Judge Carson's question. So we seem to be talking about two different things, the existence of a property interest and if there is the denial of a property interest, whether there was due process. And Judge Carson, I think, was asking you about the existence of a property interest. And you mentioned this Fifth Circuit opinion that says that there could be indirect economic benefits. Does the Fifth Circuit opinion go further to say that because of those indirect economic benefits, there is an existing property interest under the due process clause?
Your Honor, as we look at the property interest in this case,
you relied on the Fifth Circuit.
Yes, in that Fifth Circuit case, I'm going to suggest that we look at that deeper. I can't give you the answer off the top of my head, but I will point out in this matter, we have a policy 648 that UVU embraced that.
Right. And so and that's why you're arguing Hewland versus Yates.
Correct.
Now, with regard, if now that's a separate argument, and I realize that you argue Hewland versus Yates, but in the absence of the UVU policy, if there is, as Judge Carson and you were discussing, in this extraordinary lengthy period of suspension with pay, you said that the language in Hicks and Pitts is supportive, but you never told me why that is supportive. As I read those cases, they say that suspension with pay does not create a property interest, Now, the deprivation was shorter than it was here. But why would the length of the suspension with pay, without any demotion, why would that trigger a property interest? And if it does, why would that create a clearly established property interest for purposes of defeating qualified immunity?
The reason is because Dr. Shively's identity was closely associated with his property interest that everyone knows in academia, that the academic freedom of being able to teach his classes after being isolated for 5 months and the rumor mill spreading and damaging his reputation to the point where he did not have that opportunity to return to the classroom through three separate semesters, the end of the spring semester, the summer term he would normally teach, and then the beginning of the fall when he was replaced. That opportunity, that legally, clearly protected property interest to be able to teach was denied even after it was found that the allegations were false and unsubstantiated. And that is when the university had a duty to reinstate him and allow him to teach his courses. And it is because of the university's failure to follow the requirements of U.S. Supreme Court law and due process and all of the cases that we have in Hicks, in Pitts, even though there is this, okay, if there's a short period that he's not, someone's not paid or someone is paid, this is a clearly distinguishable case in the sense that it was for such a long period of time and having known damage. If I could refer the court to the timeline.
So before you go there, let me ask you a question. So do you have a case where a court has adopted this idea that you have a property interest in being able to teach your classes as an academic? Is there a specific, I mean, and I don't want to extrapolate. I want to know if there is a case that has recognized that specific right.
May I address that on rebuttal, Your Honor?
You may. I assume that means you don't have one off the top of your head.
One does not come off the top of my head. I'd like to.
Fair enough.
Thank you. I'll reserve the rest of the time. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We'll stop the clock. Judge Carson, did you have any other questions?
I'll just wait for rebuttal.
That's why you're here.
And Judge Kelly, do you?
Nothing.
All right. We'll hear from Ms. Stone.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Peggy Stone, Assistant Solicitor General, on
Ms.
behalf
Stone,
of...
Can you stop for just a second? Judge Baccarat, can we ask the other party to mute?
Yeah. Thank you, Judge Carson. Mr. Simpson, would you mute yourself, please? Thank you. Okay, let's start. Melissa, let's restart the clock.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm Peggy Stone, Assistant Solicitor General on behalf of the Utah Valley University defendants. The district court correctly dismissed the estate's complaint, and this court should affirm. As this court in the discussions has recognized, this court has long held that an administrative leave with pay doesn't implicate a due process claim because there's no loss of a property right. And that law basically, well, it governs, and the district court was bound by it. And the state can't overcome the qualified immunity hurdle in this case because no reasonable university administrator would have known that putting Professor Shively on leave pending the investigation would implicate or cause him to lose a due process right. Property rights are established by state law, and it was the estate's burden to show the contours of that property right in Utah is more than for, and professors have that are tenured have a right to notice in a hearing before they're fired. The tenure rebuts the at-will employment presumption that Utah has. But here, No disciplinary action was taken against Professor Shively. He was not fired from the university. If he had been, then notice and a hearing would have kicked in. He would have been given notice. He would have been given all of the information and evidence that the university had to dismiss him. He would have had a full hearing. Their process would have kicked in, but this was prior to that. And
let me stop you there. You said there was no discipline against him. I mean, isn't a suspension, even with pay, I mean, isn't that discipline, that the disciplinary action's been instituted against him, whether it's ultimately going to culminate in termination or not?
No, Your Honor. Administrative leave with pay is not considered an adverse employment action. It's not discipline. That's the whole point. It's to give people the opportunity to investigate to see if there's something that does need to be done. That's what the U.S. Supreme Court recognizes in Loudermill, that if the employer sees a problem, they can avoid the constitutional question by suspending the employee with pay while that's looked at. And there's no case, the estate has shown no case, nor have we found one that brackets that period of time that the investigation has to take place.
Well, counsel, doesn't 648 section 4.12 also cover substantial reduction in status in addition to termination?
Well, that provision allows for its suspension pending action. If notice is given, the president of the university may suspend the employee while that goes on. And it's a separate policy from where due process and the hearings are allowed. And as long as notice is given to the employee and to the university's board of trustees, then at the president's discretion, an employee can be on can be suspended while that goes on. And notice was given before, and it's clearly in the record. It's at volume 2, page 355. It says it gives Professor Shively the notice that he's going to be suspended. It also advises him that the suspension is to protect both him and the integrity of the investigation while it's going on. So they're just, in this case, that it's tragic that Professor Shively died by suicide, but it's not a due process violation because there was no loss of a property right.
So you're saying that this provision, 648 section 4.1.2, does not create any type of a property interest?
No, Your Honor, it doesn't, because unlike the contractual provision in the Hullen versus Yates, there's not a promise. I mean, in that case, the teacher couldn't be changed to a different department without mutual agreement or without going through the hearing process that the university had set up. Here, there's no such promise. It doesn't require that the employee and the university agree to the suspension. It doesn't provide for any other sorts of hearing before the suspension. It's very different. It just says that the president of the university, if he or she gives the employee notice and gives the university board of trustees notice that pending the investigation, the employee can be suspended. The estate complains that the allegations weren't serious enough, but that's belied by the report and it's belied by the record. I mean, here those were that Professor Shively required course books and received royalties, pocketing the royalties that would have belonged to the university, that he engaged in intimidation and threats towards students and employees, causing significant mental distress to some, that his arbitrary and grade and capricious course requirements and grading, that he violated the academic freedom of colleagues, and failure to follow disability accommodation policies, and discrimination and harassment on the basis of a protected class. Those were serious allegations that needed to be examined and investigated.
So, Counselor, let me ask you this. How long do you think your client could have drug out the investigation and not been subject to a claim? Is it your position that as long as you have him on leave with pay, it could go on for 2 years, 3 years? Or is there some breaking point there? Because I think one of the allegations here is that you had an extended investigation, but not a lot of work went into it.
I would never say that there could be an indefinite, 2-3 year suspension. I don't think 5 months reaches that. But moreover, Your Honor, I don't know that it reaches the property interest portion of what we're talking about in due process. The cases really focus for property interest on economic issues. Even the cases, that are outside of the circuit that talk about other economic interests are talking about on-call pay, extra pay because the teacher wasn't allowed to coach. I think that once you're talking about indefinite suspension for a year or 2 year, I think you might be talking more about the violation of a liberty interest rather than a property interest.
Well, what about the idea that even though the direct property interest is his salary, at some point, obviously the university was aware that he had, that he was an author of a textbook, right?
Right. That was one of the problems was that
potentially these professors have speaking engagements and other consulting arrangements where they're making additional money. What about the idea that the longer you drag out something like this, the more likely it is that you're causing faculty members harm in these other foreseeable areas? Aren't you getting into a pecuniary interest there that might be some kind of tied in property interest?
Well, I think those interests are like the on-call pay, perhaps the loss of pay from not being able to be to coach. And even in those cases, there wasn't due process didn't kick in because they didn't find that the state defined property interest tenured faculty really encompassed those. And without more, the courts were reluctant to expand it. If this court wants to go and explain to us and bracket the time and say, we could see where after a prolonged time, it does start to create a property interest, then obviously this court can explain that, but it wouldn't overcome qualified immunity in this case because it wouldn't have been clearly established. And specifically in this case, I don't think that 5 months is really enough time to say that it's gone beyond.
Well, counsel,
but certainly as far as qualified immunity in this case goes, the administrators in this case wouldn't have known that one way or the other.
Well, qualified immunity is a different, that's a different issue from whether it's a property interest.
Absolutely.
Right.
It obviously falls into the analysis, Your Honor, because qualified immunity.
In Hewlin, didn't we conclude there was a property interest as a result of the contract about not being transferred to a different department? And so why wouldn't that same rationale say that, yeah, there's a property interest, but perhaps qualified immunity would apply unless there's some case to the contrary?
And That is true, Your Honor, because it's part and parcel of the qualified immunity analysis. First, was there a constitutional violation? That was clear. Second prong, was it clearly established? Of course, here, we don't think that you get past the first hurdle of whether there was a constitutional violation because there was no property interest, either because he was on leave without pay, and then this case is different than Holland because there's no promise of not being, you don't have a right to not be suspended under that.
Well, do you have a reason to just ignore the phrase substantial reduction in status? You keep talking about salary and he wasn't terminated, but there was obviously a substantial reduction in status as a result of what happened here, wasn't there?
I don't think that you can say there was a substantial reduction in status until disciplinary action had been taken against him. But even if this is close enough for that policy to make a promise that, which I don't see where they violated their policy, because he was suspended with pay, he received the notice and the investigation went on. And before any discipline and nothing happened to him, we don't know what would have happened. But even if you say, well, okay, there might've been a property interest here, the administrators just wouldn't have been clearly established such that the constitutional question was beyond debate. So the estate just can't get past that qualified immunity question on either prong.
Okay.
I am happy to answer any questions you have on the state law immunity issues. I'll wait for you to ask me any questions, but if you don't have anything, I'm happy to submit it on our briefing and just finish unless you have further questions.
Judge Carson or Judge Kelly, do you?
I don't have anything. Thank you.
Judge Kelly, do you?
I have nothing further.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Stone. I think Mr. Sumpsian does have some rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honors. It really is compelling to see the degree in which the university is not only in this case, but in numerous other cases, utilizing a paid suspension to prolong investigations. And the timeline in our brief is particularly effective in showing not just the time frame, as has been discussed this morning, it's the extent of how much impact it's having on Dr. Shively. And it's even in the report that Dr. Price, Dr. Shively's supervisor, is, quote, worried about the effect it's having on him. And as we referenced in the court ruling, my emails to the general counsel, Karen Clems, expressing concern about how he's suffering from this and the notice that they have. And the response is to prolong and expand this into territory beyond what was intended. Now, in response to Judge Carson's question about what case really the court can look upon to provide support for Dr. Shively, the Hewlin v. Yates matter is that type of case, that the protected property interest was in Hewlin. He had the opportunity to continue to teach, be transferred into another department against his protestations, but nonetheless able to teach. And that would have, if Shively had had that opportunity, that could have largely cured his reputation, his property interest, as noted, to not be substantially reduced in status, to be demanded that he be isolated.
Counsel?
Yes.
What do you say about assuming a property interest, how qualified immunity would protect the folks involved here?
Well, in this case, UVU seeks to have absolute immunity versus qualified immunity.
Qualified immunity first.
The qualified immunity applies when due process protections are taken. For example,
assuming there's a due process violation and that the reduction in status affected a property interest, how do you get around qualified immunity if there is no basis, no case that really sets this apart?
Well, the immunity for the most recent opinion or comment from the U.S. Supreme Court was the distinction between a police officer who must make a split second decision. Justice Thomas noted the difference was that administrative officials have more time to deliberate and consider to what extent immunity should apply and due process considerations consider. Thank you. I see my time is up. Any more questions?
You're saying that there would be no qualified immunity because of the length of time that went by?
The totality of these circumstances dictate and require not an absolute immunity, but rather an opportunity for justice to be served when there has been such egregious conduct by the university.
All right, thank you.
Okay, Judge Carson, did you have any other questions? Oh, you're on mute.
I don't have any additional questions. Thank you.
All right, thank you. This matter will be submitted. Thank you both, counsel, for your excellent written and oral advocacy.